Last week we did the introduction to the prophets, and now we start today with the first prophet that has a scroll named after him. We talked last week about Elijah and Elisha and Samuel and so on, and they're mentioned in the books of Kings, but there's no scroll, no written document about what they said. Here you are, we're doing the first of them, and he's from the 8th century BC, which is the 700s as you realise. So let's have a little look at this. Let's look at the layout of the land in the 8th century BC. This is Egypt down here, which I'm sure you realise. That's Arabia, which is mostly desert. This is the Medes here. That's Assyria is really northern Iraq today. That's Assyria. The beautiful country between the two rivers of the Euphrates and the Tigris, the Mesopotamia, means in the middle of the rivers there. And Assyria, at the beginning of the century we're talking about, was really just there. And this is key to today's lecture, it hadn't yet begun its western expansion. Because over here you've got Israel, a little neck of land here between the desert and the Mediterranean. So any connection between Egypt and the rest of the world, their army has to tramp through Palestine or Israel. So here you've got our little part of the world, and we're going to be focusing there. Assyria is here, but it's not yet a threat. It will be for Hosea next week. So that's key to what I want to say to you today, and for an understanding of Amos, to realise that he's writing before, and he's the only one, because from then on you've always got Assyria or Babylonia or the Greeks or the Romans or somebody. So this is an okay time to be living if you're in Israel. Let's come to our part of the world for the moment. This is in that hatched stuff. This is our area. There are two kingdoms. They divided after the death of Solomon. So the united kingdom only lasted two generations, David and Solomon. So they never really were one, in effect. So at the death of Solomon, the rest of them broke away from the king of Jerusalem, the king of Judah, and left pretty well Judah on its own, and that's mostly desert there. So that's Judah. There's Jerusalem there, and there's the border, and the rest of it is the kingdom of Israel. They took over the main name. And Samaria was built there at the beginning of the 9th century, 800s. So what you've got here, the king of Samaria, both used for the region and the city, the capital city, the kingdom of Israel, in other words, meaning the northern kingdom, was Jeroboam II, and there his date 790 to 746. That's our period. Samaria was built 100 years earlier, that's the capital, and this time there were quite close ties between Judah and Israel. And both of them had a long living king. So it was a time of peace and let's call it prosperity. I've written a little bit there about it. There's a thriving trade going on. Commerce created a small, wealthy upper class in the capital, Samaria. The northern kingdom was far richer than Judah. It's really the country. The Bible is written by Jews from Judah, so you don't get that impression when you read the Bible, but everything around tells us that it was a bit of a backwater, actually. The main part of the land that all the rest of the world were interested in was Israel. So there's a upper class in the capital, and Samaria, in the main northern shrines, the cult was lavish. The main northern shrines, one of them is Bethel, just here. There were other ones in the different tribal areas, but the main one was Bethel. They had lavish cult, but there was little regard given to justice. Bribery, extortion, the corruption of the judiciary and exploitation of the poor undermined the moral foundations of the state. That's the situation that we're living in. And now we move to our prophet. The opening words of the prophecy of Amos read, "The words of Amos, who was a herdsman from Tekoa, who had visions concerning Israel in the days of King Uzziah of Judah, whom I mentioned briefly, and in the days of King Jeroboam, the son of Joash of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake." Now this earthquake locates Amos pretty closely. There was an earthquake about 760 BC. It's even mentioned years later, 200 years later, more, by Zechariah the prophet in chapter 14. Or no, it's 300 years later. Zechariah talks about this earthquake, so it was like they might talk about the tsunami in Japan for a few generations, because it was kind of a powerfully dramatic moment in their history. So that brings us to the period of Amos, which is 762, 2 years before the earthquake, through to about 750. And all the time Jeroboam is king, it's stable, it's prosperous comparatively, but there are problems, which you're going to hear about. And the text goes on, "He proclaimed, Yahweh roars from Zion." That's the where God dwells, the Jerusalem temple, because he's from Judah. He sees that as the center. "He thunders from Jerusalem." Zion and Jerusalem is the same place. Jerusalem is the geographic title of the city. When you talk about Jerusalem, you're talking about the place. When you talk about Zion, you're talking about the place where the dynasty of David reigns and the temple of God lives. So it's a political and religious name rather than a geographical, but it's the same place, right? "The pastures of the shepherds are mourning. The summit of Carmel withers." Again, and for the last time, a map. There's our area. Tekoa is down here, that's Jerusalem, south of Bethlehem. And Bethel is the shrine, the main shrine for the northern kingdom here, just to the north of the border. And Samaria, the capital, is there. And I thought it would interest you to get a bit of an interested me, so I thought I might interest you, to get the distances. From Tekoa to Bethel, that's Bethel here, is 35 k's. That's from here to Amaru, or here to Tuggeranong or something. I don't know exactly. It's not a terrific distance. And it's the same distance, in fact, it's 40 k's from Bethel to Samaria. So what I worked out from looking at your maps here is if you draw a straight line from the northern suburbs of Canberra to the southern suburbs of Canberra, you've got the distance between Tekoa and, you've got the distance between Tekoa and Bethel, or Bethel and Samaria. So it's only double the length of our city. He's come from Tekoa, from looking after trees and sheep and that from the country. He's gone up to Samaria, and he's preaching probably in the sanctuary, and he was shocked by what he saw in Samaria. The wealth, the injustice, the difference between the poor and the rich, the neglect of the Torah, you know, he was just so shocked by it that he couldn't stop himself talking, and he got into trouble for talking, as everyone does, but what he said was seen as needing to be reflected on by all his contemporaries and people later, and we're still doing it now. The text begins, and I won't be reading it because you can read it for yourselves, with a lot of oracles, words. This is not, that's not written from beginning to end. It's not chronologically accurate. We're not giving his early stuff and then his later stuff. In fact, some of the earlier stuff is probably at the end. So whoever put it together didn't put it together in a chronological order. So I can go through this quickly. He talks about, and he's surrounding, he's like he's circling. His main thrust is going to be Israel, which we'll do over the page. He starts off by criticizing Damascus, which is Aram, Syria, for the atrocities that it's done in its aggression and warlike behavior. Okay, he doesn't say much about it, it only goes for three verses, but he gives them a blast. Then he has a blast at the Philistines, Gaza, for their involvement in the slave trade. Slaves coming there, using them by boat, and then they distribute them out to the various mines or wherever they are. Then he has a go at Tyre up here, the great, oh, for 300 years it was the Hong Kong of this part of the world. It was the an island separated from the land. It's not now, but because it all got silted up, but separated from the land, so it was not easy to attack militarily. They had to get there by water, but it was highly defended, and all the stuff that came from Europe came through Tyre, and so Tyre had a control of all this and could, what they do in Singapore or Hong Kong or these pretty... Okay. Then he has a go at Tyre for supplying then Edom down here to the southeast for the military atrocities. He has a go at the Ammonites here, which is Jordan, present Jordan, for the atrocities in territory. Then he has a go at the Moab, which is here. So you see what he's going? He's going all around the country. Then he has a go at Judah. And when he has a go at Judah, it's his own country, he's brief, precise, and it changes. It's not... it's this. There's the... they've rejected the Torah. That's what his own people have done. God's will, as expressed in the Torah. They've rejected the law of Yahweh. They have not kept his statutes. They've been led astray by the same lies after which their ancestors walked. And you know, you read the story of the journey through the desert and the books of Numbers and Exodus and how stiff-necked they were. You know, there's different ways of looking at it, and it's all dramatic, and you wouldn't take it as historical, but it's all saying, look, it's always been like this, and here they're still doing it in Judah. They're still not listening. Then he comes, now we get into it, to his oracle against Israel, meaning the northern kingdom where he is. And this is what he accuses them of. They sell the just person for silver, the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample the heads of the powerless into the dust of the earth, and they push the oppressed out of their way. My God, if that's not relevant, what is? You know, it's got to stir us all. I won't go into it. I just read briefly on some headline before I dashed over here about it was a letter, I think, to the editor, which I didn't read, but the headline was neither of our political parties are treating asylum seekers like people. And maybe there's a lot of truth in that, really. We've lost our way. But so look at that. Now, here are the words. These are my translation. It's very hard to get good. Just is someone who's doing the will of God, someone who's trying to live an honest life. That's pretty obvious. Now, the word needy, powerless, and oppressed, I'm actually giving you the Hebrew word that they use, and some of the range of words in English that are covered by it. And I don't know whether this is going to work too well, but okay. The needy, the Hebrew is ebion, and I've suggested beggar, powerless, needy, hungry, thirsty, paralyzed, blind, deaf, lonely, last in the line, without a voice, redundant, whatever words. So these are the people that they're selling them for a pair of sandals. Now, underneath that, this is a literary point. It may not be right, but it possibly is. Sandals were basically for pilgrimage. So there's a hypocrisy going on here that's underlining it. The text wouldn't immediately show you that. In other words, yes, they're buying sandals to go to pilgrimage to the temple or to their sacred site and do all the right things and light candles and pray to whoever. So they're doing the religious cult thing, all right, but the sandals they're wearing, they've got because they've put down the poor, the needy. That's relevant to us too, isn't it? I mean, this is all very biting stuff. And we don't want to neutralise each other in despair over it, but it is asking us to look at our life and asking me to look at mine and asking everyone. The powerless, the dalim is the Hebrew for what it's worth. These seem to be the small, there's an upper class I mentioned, profiting from wealth pouring in through commerce. It's a newfound wealth they've got. And they're walking over the rest of the population. The division between the rich and the poor, as in Australia, who prides itself on egalitarianism, is getting steeper and steeper. It's the people, yes, but it's the systems that are problematic. And lastly, the oppressed, the anawim, is the Hebrew word. Who are they? The word itself picks up these kind of images, the stooped, marginalised, trodden down, deserted, deprived, outcast, despised, cast aside, humiliated, roughly treated, burdened, yoked, trapped, caught, crushed by the blows of chronic misery. So these are people that every culture knows who we're talking about here at different levels, and they're what's he criticising? What he couldn't get over, because after all he's a Jew, and he knows the Torah, and he knows that God is the very one who took slaves out of Egypt and led them to freedom. And you might recall some of the stuff on liberation theology that was going around about 20 years ago, and how it was kind of marginalised and wasn't liked in powerful places in our church either. And they kind of, I remember Cardinal Arntz, who was just a Franciscan, wonderful, of what's the capital of Brazil? São Paulo, anyhow. It wasn't Brasilia, São Paulo. He was the cardinal archbishop there, and what they did was they divided his archbishopric in to limit his thing and then finally moved him aside. And because, you know, the church was in trouble with the military juntas because it was taking the side of the poor. It was actually doing all this very seriously. So we've got major problems in this area. Well, what they're doing is they're selling the just person for silver, the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample the heads of the powerless into the dust of the earth and push the oppressed out of their way. And I'll just read you from the Torah, which of course he read, and there it is, Exodus chapter 22. It forbids this kind of behaviour. You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien. Resident aliens, people, not us, not Jews, but people have come out from outside, but they're residing with us. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You could read there, you shall not oppress or wrong a migrant, for you were migrants from the land of Ireland or wherever your people came from. You shall not abuse a widow or an orphan. If you do abuse them, when they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry. My wrath will burn. I will kill you with a sword, and your wives shall become widows and your children orphans. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you shall not deal with them as a creditor. You shall not exact interest from them. If you take your neighbor's cloak in pawn, you shall restore it before the sun goes down. Because they used their cloak, it was only warmth for the night. And they didn't. You owed me some money, so I said, well, give us your cloak, so I'm sure you're going to pay me. Well, if sunset comes and you haven't, I've got to give it back to you to sleep with and then take it back tomorrow morning or something. There has to be a system of justice, but that's pretty strong stuff. And that's what's behind Amos, but it's also behind Jesus, isn't it? And it's behind the whole of Christianity, and it's what we claim to be moved by as disciples of Jesus. We'll continue, chapter 2, verse 7. They're breaking the covenant, this is the heading, under the mask of religious observance. The prophets often speak out, all day is going to be about this, against injustice. But mostly, watch it carefully, they're not just critical of injustice, they're critical of injustice that hides behind the institutional law which supports it. So it's you can't prove it. If you went to court, you'd lose, because the law is behind the behaviour you're going on with, but it's still unjust. It's not rampant disregard of civil law, or religious civil law in their day. It's actually hidden. It's in the system. And that's what makes it all the more needing to be brought out, and the pus has to be let out of it. Well, this is his text. A man and his father go into the same girl, so that my holy name is profaned. Now, if you read it in the text simply, or if I read it in the text, you might think it was talking about sexual misdemeanors. And I'm not saying I can't prove it's not. But I'm suggesting to you, hang on, it's more likely the girl they're talking about, capital G I've put there, is possibly Asherah. Now, in the Ugarit, in the culture that they're surrounded by, their gods, El, the great god, had a consort, because the gods were in our image, weren't they? The Greek and Roman and everyone else's gods are all in our image. So they have a... You couldn't have a god without a wife, for God's sake. I mean, what a miserable life that'd be. Might as well be a Roman Catholic priest. So he's got... So Asherah is the consort of El. So in going into the same girl, I think he's talking about their worshipping different gods. Now, they may not be, they may be calling the god Yahweh. See, the name we use for God is actually nearly irrelevant. If I say I believe in God, well, don't be impressed. You better ask the next question, what kind of God do you believe in? Because I may be, you may be better to be an atheist than to believe in the God I'm believing in. So they're going in, their worship, by their behaviour, they're actually worshipping the idols. And I've got to ask myself, you've got to ask yourself, we've got to ask ourselves, the church has to ask itself, are we worshipping an idol? Or are we actually worshipping the God who was the Redeemer, liberating God from Pharaoh in Egypt, etc.? To continue the text, a man and his wife go into the same girl, inverted commas, so that my holy name is profaned. They lay themselves down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. I've given you that. I'm going to the procession to Medjugorje or somewhere, I don't know where. So I'm going on a procession somewhere, very religious, lovely, and I'm going to bring back blessed beads, and they're going to turn gold in your back pocket and all that. So I'm doing all this stuff very nicely. I'm not mocking any of that. I just don't know what it's all about. So I'm doing all that. But while I'm there and I'm sleeping out, I'm doing it really rough, I've wrapped myself around with a nice warm cloak, which I took from you because you owed me some money. And you're dying of... You're in the gutter somewhere, freezing to death. And I'm wearing it at a pilgrimage and it doesn't dawn on me. Do you see this is... Well, it's my problem. I think it must be yours too. I can't be the only one. We can be so blind, can't we? About looking in a mirror spiritually. So they lay themselves down on on garments taken in pledge. We've talked about that. In the house of the Lord they drink wine bought with fines that they imposed. Yet I it was who destroyed the Amorite before them, whose height was like the heights of cedars, who was as strong as oaks. I destroyed his boughs above and his roots beneath. This is images of God that I don't like and Jesus wouldn't like, and you know, you shouldn't like either. But he's just saying, I gave them their land. I did all this for them, and look what they're doing. They're behaving just like the people whom they replaced. It was I who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. I led you 40 years in the wilderness to take possession of the land of the Amorite. Amorite's a general word for the western Semitic tribes. I raised up some of your children to be prophets, and some of your youths to be Nazarites. We don't know a lot about the Nazarites, but Samson was a Nazarite. Samuel was a Nazarite. It was kind of like a religious order, let's call it that. And they had certain... So it was a special group of committed Jews. Is it not indeed so, O people of Israel, says Yahweh, but you made the Nazarites drink wine. You undermined. They've taken these vows, but you forced them to drink wine. God, I don't know how. You commanded the prophets, saying, and we saw so much of this last week, you shall not prophesy. Shut up. Leonardo Boff. Stop. Or whoever. You know, like, we don't want prophets. Because they're too awkward. So they silenced the prophets. I've got one quote there from Isaiah and one from Jeremiah to just amplify that. Isaiah says, you say to the seers, don't see. And you say to the prophets, don't prophesy what is right. Speak to us smooth things. Prophesy illusions. Get everybody happy. That's lovely, gentle, happy, the gentle Jesus who never, never, never troubled anybody. Don't trouble people. Make them feel cozy. And here's Jeremiah. You shall not prophesy in the name of Yahweh, or you will die by our hand. Mm-hmm.